morning, Paul. Good morning. Come in the office. Come in. You're looking quite well this week. How are you doing with your DC-OCD? How's that all going, my friend?
Well, I'm still thinking about the DC events. I just can't stop. But you gave me that homework to do, so I've started taking up painting.
This is wonderful to hear, Paul. This is excellent, excellent news. What sorts of things have you been painting?
Well, I brought one in to show you. I'm really proud of it. Have a look at this.
Oh, look at that. I'm holding it the right way. This is the way it stands, yes?
No, that's on its side.
Oh, all right. Let me turn it. This is very interesting work, Paul. I believe it's a lovely piece of abstract painting you've done here. This is wunderbar, wunderbar.
It's a picture of you.
It's not an abstract, it's...
Well, anyway, I've had enough of painting, and I don't think it's right for me. I'm not going to think about any more painting. I'm just going to read these comics here.
Oh, my God.
Hello and welcome to DC-OCD, the DC Events podcast. And this week, the events train has brought us to the station of Kingdom Come, a four-issue miniseries from 1996. Now, Kingdom Come, if you've never heard of it, it is a beautiful painted comic with fabulous art throughout, but it was written by Mark Waid. It had art by Alex Ross, but it was all sort of engineered by Alex Ross, so it's really his project. The letters are by Todd Klein, and it's edited by Dan Raspler. But I'm not doing this alone. I've got a guest with me. And this is Chris Carnes, who how do you describe your podcasting career, Chris?
Well, thanks, Paul. I've got a segment on the Batgirl to Oracle podcast, and I review the 90s Batman Adventures title, as well as the current Archie Meets Batman 66 miniseries and the Nightwing title, just from a shipper perspective. I was very fortunate to have been asked on that show by its host, the lovely and talented Stella, who's given me a little platform on her show, and I can't thank her enough for breaking me into podcasting. From there, I co-host the Bat Books for Beginners podcast with Jerry Green, where we review trade paperbacks with Batman and related characters, and I can also be found with Jerry on the Professor Frenzy Show podcast, where we spotlight indie and smaller press comics.
Yeah, great stuff. And I'm really enjoying your indie comic spotlights, particularly, I mean, I've just been to Heroes Con and, you know, saw Chris Sabella and people like that. And, you know, to hear you talking about some of the comics that I saw there fresh off the press, it was very exciting.
Yeah, I was so kicking myself that I just couldn't join you folks down there. It sounded like you had a great time.
Oh, fabulous. But anyway, what's Kingdom Come about?
Well, Paul, let me see if I can just do this in three sentences, and help me out if I miss something. In this May through August 1996 Elseworlds four-issue limited series set in a DC world with second- and third-generation characters, including a violent hero named Magog, who, after leading a battle against the villain Parasite, irradiated the Midwestern United States, killing millions, and, in a separate instance, killed the Joker, after he committed mass murder at the Daily Planet, which killed Lois Lane. A minister named Norman McKay is guided through apocalyptic visions with the Spectre. Wonder Woman talks Superman out of his imposed, exiled farm life, reestablishes the Justice League with new and former heroes, and he builds a giant prison nicknamed the Gulag for the unruly, out-of-control heroes and villains alike, which fills to capacity practically once it's built, with Batman and other heroes infiltrating Lex Luthor's Mankind Liberation Front, which has Captain Marvel under his control, that is seeking power. In the battle for control of the Gulag, in which Captain Comet is killed, Captain Marvel, freed from Luthor's mental control by Superman, sacrifices himself to squelch a UN-launched nuclear attack on the prison, and Norman McKay talks Superman out of taking his anger out on the UN, and then order is restored.
Wow, was that three sentences? A lot of commas in there.
A lot of commas and a lot of parenthetical bits. I'll have to take a shot of this.
So this comic came out under the Elseworlds banner to say this is an alternate version of sort of something that can happen in the DC Universe. That begs the question, why have we decided to look at it on this show? And I think it's because, you know, even though it's a self-contained miniseries, it really shook things up and the DC Universe has been shaped by it, sort of directly and indirectly in a number of ways. So, I mean, it's a hard one. I think this is it's probably a vanity project as an event, but it basically became a, it's not really a launcher, and it's not really an occupier because it was sort of self-contained, but it certainly became an influencer. So, there's shades of this, you know, spread out into the DC Universe, into the ongoing books, and, you know, I think even in the end of 52, it became an official Earth of number 22 or something like that.
Correct.
Yeah. So how did you come to it? Did you read it at the time? You know, how did it affect you?
Yeah, I was reading comics at the time, Paul, and remembering this time coming off the heels of Ross's work on Marvels, I just wanted to see what they were going to do with his DC project. Mark Waid was attached to it. He's sort of an encyclopedia of characters with comics in general, so he knew of all the comics, obscure ones, the characters that were fresh, and then the ones not so much. But at the time, I don't know about over there, but over here in the States, there was just a bombardment of merchandising of T-shirts and pins and posters. And then later, after the series came out, we had action figures and trading cards from Skybox. And then we got the subsequent series that followed up with The Kingdom. And we also had some one-shots with Batman's son. We had Nightstar. We had Offspring, which was the son of Plastic Man, and we had GOG, and all of this was trying to stop a event in the Hyper Time, which GOG was taking over. Oh, and there was a one-shot Planet Krypton as well, which all tied into those things.
Yeah, all part of the Kingdom, sort of, not really an event, but a collection of books, really, with a top and tail issue. So, I mean, what are your big deals from this? What's the biggest thing for you about this one?
I was blown away by the magnificent artwork, and Paul, there were so many Easter eggs in this. Right in the opening pages, there's a screen with Jimmy Olsen as the giant turtle man, and I can't believe, you know, all these little attention to details that we had in this. When we see Catwoman for the first time, she's wearing the green dress from her first appearance in Batman 1. The Gulag, just huge in scope. The current version of Flash here and how he's depicted, he has to constantly be moving, so we almost see three people going all over at once. The Superman and Batman exchanges were just marvelous, and we had Superman's, quote, recruitment speech at Weather Wizard and Captain Boomerang's bar, and all the cameos there that were just insane for a comics fan. We had Xena and Marvin from the Super Friends. Oh, and there was also an appearance of Deadman and how he was depicted. That was just absolutely stunning, and it just blew me away. I think all these panels are meant to be studied, and if you go out and get this, help yourself. Try to find a guide online or with your source material, and otherwise you'll do yourself a disservice. It's going to enhance your reading. And, oh, there was just so much there. Oh, I even forgot the part where Diana gave Clark a pair of glasses at the very end, and Clark has this giant plow as he's going through the Heartland. Oh, yeah. And, oh, how can I forget the heartwarming scene at Planet Krypton? you know, Bruce's steak is underdone, so Clark heats it up, and then Diana announces she's pregnant, but Bruce already knows that. So it was just so many spot on characterizations with this. It was just a marvelous series, top to bottom.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds like you're not short on big deals. I mean, for me, I think the art is just magnificent. And, I mean, it sort of extrapolated a version of the DC Universe into the future. Like, what were people's children like? What were the villains like in the future? You know, when Lex Luthor is really old and chubby, you know, who were the main villains on the street doing things? And there seemed to be a lot of Nazi characters, interestingly. Good thing this is fiction. But, yeah, there's so much going on in this one. And, you know, you can study every page and see, you know, things in the background. Like at one point, you know, in one spot you can see the super horse and Beppo the super monkey and things like that. So, you know, and there's all these little in-jokes and nods to, you know, if you know your DC Universe, this is a treat. And I take what you mean about getting the guide. I mean, that was one of the things that made me switch from the issues to the trade, was because, you know, there's a guide in the back of all, who's that on all the covers and things like that. And, you know, there were literally, about 60 characters on every cover of this comic, and just going through all that, it's so rich, and it really made you want to find out more. So yeah, I mean, that's how I felt about it.
Yeah, and I would hope that a new reader would pick this up and just want to get more immersed in this and hopefully seek out the knowledge and just take it more than face value if possible.
Yeah, and I mean, even though, I mean, this isn't really, there's no spin-off issue or series that started after this, certainly the DC Universe was itching to play with these toys that got introduced. And I think the very first one, I remember there was a bit of a hoo-ha because the first JLA annual had two villains who appear on one page in the comic called the Brain Trust, and they were showing up in this JLA annual. And I don't think they've been seen since. Since then, there was major storylines in JSA. There was GOG got a one-shot, and then there was a Magog series. So, I mean, it spun off really weirdly, and I mean, lots of characters started to adopt these costumes. I mean, Captain Atom did a mini-series where he was wearing the outfit that he wears in Kingdom Come. So, yeah, it's like the DC Universe was like, oh, so impressed with all this stuff, and just, you know, they couldn't wait to squeeze it into the books.
Absolutely. One of the things I wondered about, and I wanted to touch base with you on this, Paul, we had all these subsequent appearances, if you will. And do you think that helped its legacy or hurt it? Because obviously, I don't know. I wonder if Alex Ross just meant this to be a standalone, but we had a success, if you will, in this, and they wanted to have trot these characters back out again and sort of expand on it. But did it have as much impact as Resonance, do you think? And do you think it might have hurt the legacy with all these subsequent appearances?
I think Kingdom Come is sailing so far above that I don't think anything can hurt it. I mean, the way I feel about it is, I mean, the Kingdom sounded like a good idea, but Alex Ross, you know, soon pulled out of it because it wasn't really going where he wanted it to go. And I think there's of those one-shots, there's probably about three that are worth your time, just as, you know, being pretty good stories or having, you know, really good art. But, yeah, there's nothing that needed to be there. And certainly, you know, Magog getting a series, but written, even though it was written by Keith Giffen, it's not a good idea. And that character, I mean, he's in the book, in Kingdom Come, to be a foil to Superman and to represent, you know, 90s cool and, you know, what happens when violence is the only solution to things. And if you take him out of that context, he's not a very interesting character, and he's one note and not, it's not someone you want to follow. So that's kind of how I felt about it all.
Agreed.
Yeah. Okay. So, Chris, you wanted to talk a little bit about the differences in the collected edition with the original series?
Yeah, there were a couple of things there. Now, if you got the original issues, you missed out on a couple of things that were added in subsequent trade volumes. There was one of my favorite moments is the final bit where we go to Bruce at the restaurant Planet Krypton, which is sort of a themed restaurant, and all the staff is dressed in superhero apparel, and I believe this is owned by Booster Gold. And we have little things in showcases. It's sort of like the Planet Hollywood of its time, where we have just memorabilia and things going out. And Clark goes in with Diana. Bruce is still wearing like this exoskeleton because it's a little difficult to move around. And he orders a steak, and it's brought back to him, and he wants it well done. And he gets it back, and it's not even a shade over medium. So Clark heats it up. Diana says, "Bruce, we have an announcement." And without even looking up, Bruce says, "Oh, you're pregnant." And Diana's mouth literally drops, and she is shocked how he knows. And he says, well, I can tell you put on a little weight, and there's just other things. But Bruce is also asked to be the step-parent, so that was really a touching moment there. There's also a scene in Fourth World where Superman does have a visit and with the Fourth World characters and Orion, and I thought those were some nice additions to this, which sort of framed the story quite well.
Yeah, it's nice stuff, and it's not essential, but if you get the trade, it's certainly, I mean, and you can get the trade very easily. There's a new edition like every 3 weeks at the moment, and it's been collected in giant size and, you know, annotated and slip bound editions, etc. So certainly there's a version of the trade out there. I think there's a new one coming out under the DC Black Label, which sounds very sexy. But yeah, it's great. But I mean, the character guide in the back is fabulous, and you know, all these extra notes and Alex Ross's, you know, designs and everything. So you get a collected edition of Alex Ross stuff without, you know, having extras, because it's all so lush and wonderful to look at. So I definitely recommend that.
It also identifies the characters too, which you may not have a problem with like I did. You know, some of the easier ones, you know, Starman is more identifiable, certainly, but someone like Avia, you're not sure who the offspring of Scott Free and Big Bard is by name, perhaps, until you get to a little more deeper into it. So it's nice to see, oh, well, that's got to be so-and-so, and sure enough, you have to get this guy to get the name and a little bit of detail with it, who these people are.
Yeah, yeah, it's wonderful stuff. So we might play a quick promo for one of your shows, and then we'll come back and do some scoring.
Thank you so much.
Night falls on the great halls of Frenzywood. Chris and Jerry read this week's comics with a sense of terror and foreboding. Which books will they enjoy, and which will unsettle them with an eerie mood striking into their very souls? They work their way through the rare and mysterious tomes to find those worthy of your attention. A knock comes to the door, bringing something strange and otherworldly that no one has ever seen before. It's
the Professor Frenzy Show. Show.
Professor Frenzy, it's a show. Professor Frenzy Show. Professor Frenzy, it's a show. Professor Frenzy Show.
If you like indie comics and also like podcasts, please try the Professor Frenzy Show. Find the show in iTunes search and Facebook. Episodes tweeted out on @ProfessorFrenzy on Twitter. Thank you.
And now it's the time where we score the event, which is sometimes tricky and sometimes fun. But this time, you know, Chris and I, we're being joined by Collected Editions, who is, if you don't know the Collected Editions blog, it's a fabulous place on the web which goes through, constantly going through new DC trades as they come out and old ones, and it's, you know, advocating for things being collected, and been doing this for decades, I think. It's great stuff. And so Collected Editions has joined us, and he said, his introduction was, I doubt that DC thought Alex Ross's mid-1990s vanity project would one day become an established Earth in their multiverse. Kingdom Come was an unexpected hit, the kind of perennial seller that DC is still trying to manufacture on purpose with initiatives like their upcoming Black Label line. Kingdom Come was also one of the first times a DC miniseries would get its own statues and action figures, the kind of thing that's commonplace today. So, all right, so let's get into the scoring. So, my thoughts about eventiness, it's self-contained, so I don't think it is that eventy at the time. I mean, it has a massive parade of characters, but it's all in the one book. So I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10, just because I think the creativity that was displayed could not be contained as the, you know, universe carried on without this book. So it sort of exploded after the fact. What about you, Chris?
Well, I kind of flipped it just to follow your point a little bit, and I'm using the scale if I have to consider, like, say, the death of Superman. If that's a 10, I have to concede that this does fall a little bit short. It didn't really draw any of the outside public into this. But I think if I was reading comics at the time, I dare say I'd be far hard pressed to find anyone who didn't know about this event. And I boosted my score, Paul, pretty much based on the merchandising subsequently that we had after this, with the action figures and the trading cards, and there was even an audio play done. So with that, I really was generous with this. I hope you're sitting down. I gave this 9 out of 10.
Whoa.
For eventing us, yeah.
Wow, a big scorer. Okay.
Yeah, because I just don't think other series had the trading cards and things of that nature. So I kind of went that way with the action figures as well.
Yeah, I get it. It is a marketing event, I guess, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay, so collected editions, he said 5 out of 10. He said, Kingdom Come became an event, but it was not fashioned as an event comic. At the time, Kingdom Come had no influence on the larger DC universe, but various Kingdom Come-inspired characters would soon show up in DC titles. In 1998, DC published the New Year's Evil GOG one-shot as part of a fifth-week event, which led into 1999's The Kingdom miniseries. This was DC's most direct Kingdom Come sequel, though it was by Mark Waid, only without Alex Ross's involvement, and it's never been included in Kingdom Come reprints. The Kingdom did introduce Hypertime, a paradigm for DC's continuity that has not really been used since, but was mentioned as recently as Dark Knight's Metal. So, okay. So, Chris, do you want to take us through what you think of the writing?
Yeah, thanks so much, Paul. One thing I had to think about, I read this a couple of times over, and I am so torn with my score between a 9 and a 10. I have to ask myself, did the morality of this just hit the reader a little too hard in places? And was it overwritten? Wade did a marvelous job. All the characters are spot on. The Superman and Batman exchanges were just masterfully done, as was a compelling story. I landed on a 9 out of 10. I think it's just short of perfect, but by no means am I trying to diss Mark Waid. This is an excellent story, but I landed at a 9 out of 10 on this one.
Okay. Well, I think I went one better and went to 10. I mean, I don't love everything about the characterization of some of the, you know, Wonder Woman particularly. You know, I think if you're not Superman and Batman, you kind of you get short shrift in it. A lot of characters sort of get written off, or you know, just appear to be killed, etc. But I can't fault the writing, and I definitely can't say this is written worse than any other event that we've covered so far. So I mean, the writing it's compelling, it's artful. You know, the phrasing, the dialogue stays with me. There's, you know, really strong stuff. So I can't give it anything other than 10.
Sounds good.
Now, let's see what CE said about this. So, he said, Kingdom Come is a dystopian story, but Alex Ross and Mark Waid had the wisdom to create a future more normal and less extreme than most dystopias. In that way, it was easy to relate to Kingdom Come and to picture it as a valid future for the mainstream DC universe. Among Kingdom Come's strengths is the driving mystery as to which heroes would battle in the end, one that had people even scouring the book's advertisements for clues. By letting Pastor Norman McKay narrate the book, Ross and Waid gave the story a hopeful tone. This lack of cynicism helped Kingdom Come more readily transcend to other mediums like novelization and audio drama. So another 10 out of 10 there. Okay. So now I guess we have to think about the art. And I mean, I don't even have to explain this. I'm giving you a 10. It's, you know, it's one of the best looking comics you'll ever see in your life, I'd say. So what do you think, Chris?
Paul, I also gave it a 10. I just thought this was masterfully done. It was certainly testament to Alex Ross's talent, and it was just blew me away. I have to concede some of the covers may not be that compelling one after the other. You're just seeing a lot of characters. It does draw you in. Some are recognizable, some aren't, and hopefully that sparks some curiosity among the new and old reader alike. But there's not a lot of action being depicted, although they are very, very beautifully rendered. Someone might have a quibble with the covers, and I would concede that. But overall, this is just a masterpiece. So I have to give it a 10 out of 10.
Yeah. Let's see what CE said, whether he agreed. He said 10 out of 10. There you go. Kingdom Come is an artistic masterpiece. Ross paints superhero battles and domestic scenes with equal beauty. You could spend years finding every homage Ross tucked into the panels. Not to mention, Ross and Waid designed and wrote histories for over 100 existing legacy or new characters, each rich enough to support a series of their own. Surely Kingdom Come would not have made such a lasting impression without Ross's level of detail. There you go. Okay, what about the impact and legacy?
Well, before I give my number, I do have to question if, I'm going back to my prior question, if any of these spinoffs hurt rather than helped its legacy. Still, I have to consider this is one of the most masterpieces that I had in comic books that happened in my lifetime. You know, funny thing too, Paul, you know, I was doing some research on this, and I come across a interview that Mark Waid did at AwesomeCon back in June 2016. And this, I found this on the website Monkeys Fighting Robots. And at the time, the Batman v Superman had come out, and it was noted by Waid himself that this was a little dark and gloomy. And the interviewer asked Waid, "Do you think Kingdom Come potentially had some impact influencing the direction of the film?" And Waid answered, "I hope not. Alex and I talk about this all the time. The perplexing thing is that Kingdom Come was supposed to be a cautionary fable. It was supposed to be like, quote, this is what happens if you go down a very dark road. It ends badly," end quote. It seems like a lot of people only took the first part of that message, which is, oh, look at the cool stuff in Kingdom Come. No, no, no. Lois Lane is not supposed to die. Superman and Wonder Woman are not supposed to be a couple. It's kind of fascinating to me to see some of the wrong lessons learned, but some of the right lessons too. I love the fact that Kingdom Come managed to elevate Wonder Woman to the, quote, Trinity level. It wasn't just Superman and Batman anymore. I'm proud of what we accomplished, but every once in a while I think, oh, you learned the wrong lesson there. So yeah, I do have to think this does have quite a legacy, and it is still talked about. Some of the spinoffs I don't think, you know, hit a home run, but they were nice to get those characters in circulation. I was wavering between a 7 and an 8, which is, I have to give you, this is very generous, but if it's still being talked about and still in print, I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. Yeah, I think that, I mean, there's definitely really good things about the legacy, and I think there's poor things. One of the things is that Wonder Woman pretty regularly started carrying a sword after this series.
Great observation.
Yeah, and, you know, making Wonder Woman, you know, much more of an aggressive warrior, I mean, sometimes that comes and goes from the comics. But certainly I think the impact of Kingdom Come, it sort of cooled off in the 2000s. I mean, it certainly, you know, it got stronger and stronger for a while. But I think by the end of the 2000s, DC Universe had sort of got it out of its system a bit. So, yeah, but as you said, I mean, it's so influential as far as the look of things, the potential of the thinking of the future. And it wouldn't surprise me if some of it starts to come back. You know, there's so many character designs here that you could just pick up and run with. And, you know, the Metal Men forming one big robot called Alloy. I mean, ideas like that, they're going to keep, you know, people will rediscover these. Someone like Steve Orlando, who can't leave the 90s alone, he's gonna grab something from here sooner or later. Yeah, so...
If you have a favorite obscure character, it's here, somewhere.
Yeah. Except for Guy Gardner.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 7 for those reasons. Let's see what Collected Editions said. He said 7 out of 10. Oh, we're on the same page. The irony is that the self-contained Kingdom Come wasn't supposed to have that much legacy, but Kingdom Come characters have cameoed almost constantly in DC titles in the past 20-plus years, including major appearances in Mark Waid's Flash, Jay Farber's Titans, Chuck Austin's Superman, James Robinson's Starman, Geoff Johns JSA, and Peter Tomasi's Superman Wonder Woman. A version of the Magog character even joined the Justice Society and had his own 12-issue series, and Magog has appeared as recently as in the Rebirth Nightwing and Supergirl series. I did not know that. DC has kept Kingdom Come continually in print with various paperbacks and hardcovers, a deluxe size edition, an absolute edition that's about to be re-released this October, and a black label edition due out in 2019. So, now, and that's the hard part of the show where I have to add all this up. So, let's look at your scores. You gave it 36 out of 40. I gave it 32 out of 40. And Collected Editions gave it 32 out of 40, but he is semi-OCD, so we halve his score down to 16. And if we add these together, we get a total out of 100, which gives us, it looks like, an 84 out of 100. That is very high on the list. So, basically, we're placing this above Death of Superman and Nightfall.
Whoa.
And just below Crisis on Infinite Earth. So, I think this is number 2 on our list. Good grief. But quality-wise, yeah, why not? Okay. So, There is one place, if you want to hear a really good long, deep dive into Kingdom Come, Views from the Long Box by Michael Bailey. He had Professor Allen and Emily on, and they covered this extensively in episode 243, which is in their archives. So that's worth a good listen. And yeah, and there's no feedback this week, perhaps because we had we had Jimmy McGlinchey on the show last week, and he always sends us an email. So if he was on, he can't send us some feedback. So, Chris, is there anything you want to plug or recommend to people?
Thanks so much, Paul. I had a great time being on the show. I want to give a shout-out to Chris D., who writes Cattails Fanfic, and Bob Buster, and everyone who tweeted their support on Twitter when I said I was rereading Kingdom Come for this podcast. Again, you can find me on Backworld Oracle, which drops once a month. You can find me on the Bat Books for Beginners podcast, which drops every 2 weeks, and the podcast The Professor Frenzy Show, which drops every Wednesday.
Okay, and as always, head on over to Comicosity, where they have the ladder, the table. So if you find the podcast link and click on that, you'll see all our episodes are listed there, all the events that we've covered, and they also have the score of them all, and you can rank them and resort them based on the score or on the number that came out, on the title, however you like. You can see it all there, and that's growing bit by bit and getting more and more impressive as we go along. So I think next time we're going to be back without Chris. Thanks for joining me, Chris. You did a fabulous job, as always, very professional and thorough. But yeah, next time it's a Waiting for Doom, and I think after that we'll be back with Mike, and I will be covering The Final Night, which is another interesting one. And I think that's all. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Paul.
Excellent. See you all next time on DC OCD.